This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening, and special gratitude for listening to my gravelly voice this hour, but you are going to want to stay with us.
Shut it down.
Sounds of protests in cities around the country. More than 200 arrests in New York City in nonviolent protests over no indictment in the Eric Garner case. Echoes of Ferguson still on the minds of protesters. In Cleveland, authorities are investigating an officer seen on tape shooting a 12-year-old black boy who was holding a toy gun. African-American men and boys dead at the hands of law enforcement. A nation wonders, where is the accountability? What is justice? And what is the future?
I have a biracial son who looks black into society, and he's 12. And I find it very hard because you know that you are essentially saying to your child, you can't be innocent anymore.
She's an academic and a mom. Renee Romano is author of Racial Reckoning and professor of history at Oberlin College. Listen now to Gregory Carr. He's a college professor in St. Louis, but he's seen his academic credentials instantly fall away and desert him when he has encountered police in his own neighborhood.
I'm a college professor. I live in a very nice neighborhood, and my kids go to private schools. However, I had some family members, some cousins, come from Los Angeles. One of my cousins got a little warm in the house, being from California, and decided to go downstairs and open up the window. It set off my alarm, and so I turned on the porch light, and there was the St. Louis County Police. And so I opened the door to simply tell them, officer, that this has been, you know, this was a false alarm. They pulled their guns on me.
Now listen to Nicholas Casal, former detective first grade of the NYPD, who has had a whirlwind of thoughts and feelings since the Eric Garner grand jury decision.
When we start questioning the police officer like that, the police officer must be one of three things. He must treat everybody fairly, blindly, and infirmly, because that is the role of the police officer.
With the voices of protesters around the nation echoing in our minds, we brought these three people together in our studios to begin this hour with some tough talk about a hard subject. Stay with us and see if we got anywhere on an issue that has gripped the nation. We start with Nick Casal again from the NYPD.
I think that we look upon the police officer and we put so many burdens upon him. Police officers are not social workers. They're not going to go out there and remediate the ills of society. That is specifically the responsibility of elected officials in the legislature.
Let me make it simple then. What should cops do to change? They don't have to change everything. What do cops have to do to change?
Well, cops have a few things that we could look at to change, but just because we want to change one side of the equation, let us not discount the fact that those people who are encountered by police officers should have a degree of responsibility.
All right, well, we'll get to that. Why don't you think about what cops should do to change? Greg Carr, what do you think is the change here, is the bridge here, is the fix here?
I believe the fix is reform. In our situation in Ferguson, because I am 3 miles from Ferguson, I live in Normandy, and in a city that's 67% African-American, you have three police officers that are African-American, and so you have this presumption of someone in your community that doesn't understand your community, doesn't understand your cultural sensibilities, and suddenly when someone who is not from that community comes into that community and brings their own cultural baggage with them, there's going to be conflict. So I think education is the key and dialogue. Now, last time we talked, I coined a phrase, courageous conversations. Now I think I would like to upgrade it with difficult dialogue. And we start having difficult dialogue about race. And one of the things that I'm doing in one of my classes that I'm teaching is their final paper is over Langston Hughes' poem, I Too Sing America. And when I gave that assignment the other night for our last paper, I would say part of my – it's about a 50-50 divide in my room between black and white. I could tell that some of my white students got a little tense when we started getting into it, and some of my African-American students felt very empowered, like, yes, we want to talk about this. So that's why I say education. And when I say education, it means one-on-one conversation.
All right, let's do it. Greg, you and Nick. You're nominated right now. I want you to have that conversation right now.
I agree with you, Greg. I mean, what we should do is to address the issue of disproportionate members of the Ferguson Police Department that do not represent the community. I am always a strong proponent that the police officer should come as when I became a police officer, I lived in the city. I'm born and raised in New York City. And when I was appointed a police officer, I had come from the city. So I understood the needs of the city. So if we want to bring police officers into the fold, we should give extra credit to local recruitment. We have a lot of quality people coming out of the military. We should give them some extra credits to join the ranks of the police department. We should not only stress education upon coming on the police department, but police departments do not have continued education as you go through your career. But remember this, with all of this comes something else. We need pay and benefits to support the requirements that we're going to impose upon the police officers. So I agree, regional, local policing, elected officials, civilian complaint review boards, and equal pay and benefits will give you a higher quality of police officer. And I think that that's all we could ask for.
Greg.
And if I can coattail on that, there needs to be that cooperation between the police department and the community, not during a tragedy or a crisis, but when times are good. It seems like the only time we ever want to have these discussions is what we're talking about today with the Eric Garner case and Michael Brown case and the young man in Ohio. So we need to have these sorts of conversations when things aren't as tense.
Renee, would the test of that educational process, and I want to hear your fix as well, mm-hmm. is the test of this educational process working? That the next video, like the Eric Garner video, everyone will agree that something fundamentally wrong happened there and there won't be this grand jury outlier in the middle of the process? Is that the test?
Well, I think that's an important step, that we get more consensus in this country, or more recognition, not even consensus, more recognition that there are real problems, that it's not just aberrations, that there's something fundamentally going wrong here. And until you get that kind of willingness to concede that there's a problem, it's going to be hard to move together towards collective solutions. And I think education dialogue, absolutely vitally important. I also think accountability is vitally important. One of the things we've seen in each of these cases that where the grand jury does not indict is essentially a statement that these killings are not murder, right? It is us as a society, as grand jury reflecting the American society, saying we do not consider this murder. Murder is only murder in a society that considers it so. It is something we define.
But that's part of the education.
Accountable.
That's part of the education because grand juries don't reflect American society.
Except there are steps that one of the things that can happen and that is starting to happen is the Justice Department coming in, the U.S. Justice Department, and saying this decision is problematic. In Cleveland, where I live, they just came out with a report yesterday saying the Cleveland Police Department has an endemic use of excessive force. There can be outside figures who hold or institutions who hold people accountable. And this is a case where we need to hold police accountable for the way they're acting. But I also think, and I am sympathetic to one of the things that Nick is saying, that it's not just police. If we reduce this only to police are the only ones responsible for change, that's, to me, it's a larger issue. We need to ask ourselves hard questions about the world we live in. When, you know, the Tamir Rice case, where you see a 12-year-old black boy being shot after given 2 seconds of warning, which is not enough time to even, it's astonishing to me, and it's horrific to me, that would be the response, that this little 12-year-old boy is such a threat, we need to shoot him within 2 seconds of arriving on the scene. But to me, that shows an underlying problem of racial bias that are endemic in American society.
If I said right now to the three of you, and you were in this studio, you know, let's just go and join this crowd in the street protesting. I don't know what we'd say. I don't know what sign we would hold, but let's just go be a part of it. Nick, would you come along?
No, I wouldn't, because I think that we have to accept what has happened. I mean, Mamamedi said to accept the truth no matter where it comes from, and I don't think that it is the responsibility of protesters, looters, pundits, and politicians.
Protests is not looting.
No, I put all four of them together. I don't think that we should have to hear the cries of the crowd when the judicial process, they believe, has failed. I think if you believe that a police officer is a second-class citizen, that just because the grand jury in two of these cases has come out and voted a no true bill, that we're not satisfied with that.
But isn't that what the police are protecting, the laws of the Constitution that make it okay to protest?
Yes, the first day on the police department, you defend and uphold the Constitution of the United States. That's your oath.
But you wouldn't join the protest?
I would not join the protest because the protest, the purpose of the protest, as I see it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is to change the lawful decisions of two grand juries.
Let's get Greg's view. Would you join the protest, Greg?
Given the chance, yes, because without protest, there would never have been a Boston Tea Party, because the Boston massacre that we know it was also known as the Boston Riot. And ironically, an unarmed young black man was shot. Looting and rioting happened, and we got in America. And I'm not saying that's what we need to do, but what I am saying is protesting is a part of the fabric of America. It is a part of the Constitution. We have the right to assemble and protest. Without protest, we would not have had the Civil Rights Movement. We would have not had the women's suffrage movement. So we would not have had abolition of slavery. So protest is a part of American society, and without it, we would not be the democracy that we are today. So, yes, I would join them, and in spirit, I am a part of them, because many of those young protesters are and have been some of my students, and they're traveling across Missouri to make their voices heard even at this moment as we speak, and I'm proud of them.
Renee?
I would absolutely join the protests, because I think we as Americans all have a responsibility to help the society that we hope to see come into being. And as I see it, these protests are about not necessarily reversing two grand jury decisions. I think that's past. It's about making sure future decisions are different, but also about asserting what I would have on my sign is Black Lives Matter, that everyone's life matters equally, that I don't want anyone's son to carry the burden of not being allowed to be a child, of having to face extra fear in their own home. No one should have to carry that burden.
Well, I want to thank all three of you for thinking hard about some hard subjects and thinking clearly, or as clear as we can on this day, about the way forward. Nicholas Casale, Gregory Carr, and Renee Romano, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And, of course, this is your discussion, your forum as well.
My name's Greg O'Driscoll. I'm calling from Waycross, Georgia. There's something seriously amiss with the power structure in this country. We want to believe that the system works, because if none of us believe the system works, then what are we fighting for? What are we voting for? What are we trying to protect?
My name is Jennifer Adams. I'm calling from Vernal, Utah, and I admire the people who are keeping their emotions under control, because I am a white, middle-aged female, and I am absolutely livid. I just want to scream at somebody. I'm ashamed to be white, frankly.
Vent, explain, plead, argue. Help us all get somewhere on this. Call 8778-MYTAKE. Be a part of The Takeaway.